Stay tuned for a Juno Afternoon. We'll be talking with Robin Thomas about hospice and home care of Juno and their fundraising whale watch on Saturday. We'll get a preview of tomorrow night's VA Town Hall listening session. We'll highlight a bike rodeo, and Majel Pratt will be here to talk about the first Friday art show at the Silver Bow. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more today on KTOO Juno. And don't forget, if you miss us, we're on KRNN at 4. That's Juno Afternoon next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Arizona's congressional delegation is asking the FBI and the U.S. Department of Justice to help them stop the sale of Hopi objects at a Paris auction house next month. As Carrie Young reports, the effort is among several avenues officials are exploring to repatriate the items.
The written request was signed by all 11 members of Arizona's congressional delegation and submitted to the agencies late last week. The Hopi tribe has already filed several lawsuits in the French court system to stop the upcoming sales in at least five similar auctions that have already taken place in Paris. So far, the tribe has not emerged successful. Tribal Chairman Herman Honani says the items being sold hold religious significance and should not be bought or sold. He adds because of that, the tribe will not consider buying the objects as a method of repatriation.
Thereby, we would be putting a value on these kind of objects, and we just don't want to do that. We can't go there. And like it was mentioned, that once we start doing that, the value of these objects just goes up.
There are 13 items up for sale in auctions scheduled for June 1st and 10th. For National Native News, I'm Carrie Young.
Scientists in the Karuk tribe in Northern California are warning of a juvenile salmon fish kill because of drought conditions in the Pacific West Coast. Reporter Christina Onnestad has more.
Lack of water and warming temperatures have made the Klamath River a breeding ground for Saramita shasta, a deadly bacteria that is threatening endangered salmon that live there.
In the Klamath River right now, it is a serious situation.
Jim Simonde with NIMST, the National Marine Fisheries Service, says 80 to 90% of the salmon they've tested are positive with the bacteria, meaning many of this year's run will die. Craig Tucker, the natural resources policy advocate for the Karuk tribe, says there just isn't enough water as California hits its fourth drought year in a row.
The water's just not there. We're in a year where the snowpack is something like 2% of historic average. We've just never seen a year like this. It's really a catastrophe.
And it's not even summer yet, when temperatures will get hotter and drier, creating a more hostile environment for endangered salmon. Meanwhile, state regulators are expected to release an estimated 5 million more juvenile salmon in the Klamath River any day now. Simone Day with NIMS says many of those fish could contract the disease and die too. Christina Onnestad, National Native News, California.
The head of tourism for Wisconsin's 11 tribes is spearheading efforts to develop TV programming to promote tribal tourism. Danielle Kading reports.
Ernie Stevens is the executive director of Native American Tourism of Wisconsin. Stevens says they're filming video of the state's only tribal national park, tribal fisheries, festivals, and more. He says they're pulling together a pilot program that he hopes will put tribes on the map.
We can just capture the right essences of the 11 tribes of Wisconsin, get it out there to the mass audience and get people to see. Not only is it education for them to know who we are and make them feel welcome to our reservations and want to visit, but also just be able to understand, you know, again, the differences among the tribes.
Stephen says they're trying to raise about $25,000 by early August to jumpstart the project. He says they'd like to have the pilot show finished this fall and offer a series of programs by next spring. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
A group of U.S. senators has introduced a bill to help preserve endangered native languages. The Native Language Immersion Student Achievement Act establishes a grant program under the Department of Education. The bill seeks to limit overhead costs and reduce resource demands on tribes seeking funding for language programs. The Sundance Institute is hosting a Native Forum at Wayne State University in Detroit, Michigan next month. The New Frontier Native Forum is a space for Indigenous artists, youth, activists, and media makers to have conversations and participate in sessions focused on social and environmental justice. The event is scheduled for the third week in June. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling with producer Jeff Brown. Our first guest today is Robin Thomas. She is the Development Director for Catholic Community Services, and she's here to tell us about a whale watch on Saturday. And prior to going on the air, the three of us were discussing that. Alan Marine, in particular, has been very, very generous offering for free to a number of nonprofit organizations whale watches. It seems like there is one almost every weekend, and how we might take that for granted in our community, but each of us had stories about participating in a whale watch that was unbelievably fantastic and unpredictable, you know, I think, in the grandeur. So I'll just say that as an introduction, because I think our audience might hear many promotions for whale watches, and I was sharing I had seen eight of them do a cooperative feeding for over 30 minutes on the last fundraising whale watch I was on. So tell us a little bit about this one, Robin, and what its intent is, and in order to help the organization.
Great. Thank you so much, Lori. Thank you for having us here. So this is a fundraiser for Hospice and Home Care of Juneau, and the event is on Saturday, June 13th. It's from 1 to 4, so it's 3 full hours on the water. Tickets are $75. That does include a light buffet. We've been doing this event annually for over 10 years. Our lead volunteer on this event is Linda Harris, and she actually, I think, is one of the original people who started this event when she was working for hospice and home care years and years ago. And she will be coordinating all of the food, and she's been doing that year after year, so it's a really good spread. People are always looking forward to what they're going to eat on the whale watches as well. And like we were saying before, no matter how long you've been in Juneau, no matter how old you are, whale watching is just amazing, and it's exciting every single time. And this is sponsored by Allen Marine Tours, and we're very appreciative of their generosity to us year after year and being able to have this event to support Hospice and Home Care of Juneau.
Well, tell us a little bit about hospice services here in Juneau and what services they provide and some of the guidelines for provision of hospice and home care.
Yeah. Hopefully I'm able to answer that well enough. As I'm the development director for all of Catholic Community Service, and my coworker Kelly is the director, and he's out of town today, so I kind of wish he was here. But I will let you know that there are two parts of it. There is the hospice side, and then there is the home care. And I think a lot of people identify with hospice and not necessarily know that we do have home care services as well. So if you've just had surgery and you need extra assistance in your home or something like that, that's where the home care side would kick in. Hospice and home care in Juneau, I think, has been around for since about the 80s. And the community saw the need for this service. We're really fortunate to have it in Juneau because a community of our size can't necessarily make enough money to keep this program going because we're just a small community, and it really takes larger amounts of people on the services or programs to support the funding and Medicare and Medicaid. So we're really fortunate to have it, but we have to reach out to the public continuously to keep this program running and have multiple events and fundraisers so that we're able to have this service.
Are hospice and home care services offered for free in our community? You mentioned Medicare for the elderly, Medicaid for those who qualify on income eligibility. Do the recipients also pay a fee out of their pocket, or can they receive those services?
We do take insurance as well, and then we will take anyone who needs our services regardless of their ability to pay.
And hospice, does it employ, for example, nurses, I would suppose, or is it all volunteers who help after being trained, for example, with how to assist in the home for a person who is dying?
It's actually a combination. We do have nurses and clinical staff, and then we also have volunteers that will help with, like, respite relief, and we have, after maybe someone passes, we have bereavement services for up to a year and support group. We're also developing a position to do some more community outreach, working with doctors and educating them as well about our services so that they're able to communicate to families what the service is and maybe help families sooner than we've been able to help them currently.
Mm-hmm. How do you advertise the services so that I would guess that these are services you don't think about until you need them. And you might not know someone who has used them before. So how does Catholic Community Services conduct its outreach right now to inform the public about hospice and home care?
I think it's just mostly referrals. It's from local physicians referring us.
Well, how about some contact information then, both to purchase tickets for Saturday the 13th, and again, it's not this Saturday, it's Saturday the 13th,
yes.
Whale Watch. And if someone wanted to get some more information about the components of the hospice and home care services, what should someone do to do either of those?
Well, the number for Hospice and Home Care of Juneau is 463-6111, and that is on the flyer. We have flyers for this event all around town. It's also on our website, ccsjuneau.org. And if you have any questions about purchasing tickets or any of CCS's services, you can call me directly at 463-6145.
So before we went on the air and we were talking about the offerings of a variety of whale watches, you mentioned that these sell out every year. So if folks are thinking they're just going to wander down to the Auk Bay Harbor on Saturday the 13th, that's probably not a good idea. They sounds like they need to snag their ticket prior to them. There being, what, 120 seats available?
Yeah, exactly, Laura. There are 120 seats available. And because we've been doing this for so many years, I think people have looked forward to it year after year, and every year we do sell out, and we usually have a waiting list.
I'm going to repeat that phone number then, because there are just a couple of ways to get the tickets, and one is stopping by Catholic Community Services up at 419 6th Street or calling this number. It's pretty easy to remember. It's 463-6111. That's also a one-stop number to call for additional information about hospice and home care, which are the services that will benefit from the Whale Watch on Saturday, June 13th. And I want to thank Robin for being with us. Again, the tickets are $75. It's from 1 to 4, and it sounds like it includes a pretty nice spread as well.
Yeah, it really does. Linda does an exceptional job on that. And it is also departing from Auk Bay Harbor, Stettler Harbor. The boat departs at 1 o'clock, so we ask that people arrive by 12:30. Allen Marine has to stay on a very tight schedule, and we unfortunately have had to leave people
on the dock.
On the dock in the past, so I'd hate to have that happen again this year. And then there's also items on sale on board, so they do include some drinks, but if you're looking for any alcoholic beverages or sodas, you can purchase those with Alan Marine on board. And we make it also easy to purchase the tickets if you call us directly as far as credit card. If you don't want to stop by the office, I can hold your ticket for you and have it at the boat for you.
Oh, so that does make it easy.
Yeah.
Those are all good tips.
Yeah,
thanks.
I've even mailed people their tickets. So.
All right. Well, thank you for coming by, Robin.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that's June 13th, Whale Watch to benefit hospice and home care.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 4th of June, 2015, anniversary of the day in 1919, when the 19th Amendment to the Constitution was passed by Congress, giving women the vote. Women voted in their first national election in November 1920. It's the anniversary of two crucial battles in World War II, 1940, the British evacuation from Dunkirk, and 1942, the Battle of Midway in the Pacific. Winston Churchill had sent British forces to Belgium to try to stop the advance of the Nazi invasion. The British were completely overwhelmed by the German army. They got bottled up in the little coastal town of Dunkirk. They'd abandoned equipment on the way. Almost 500,000 men stranded on the beach. Nazi bombers began to attack from the air. And then Hitler gave a personal order to stop. The German commander knew that he could probably wipe out the British in a single battle and the war would be over, but one of Hitler's aides at the time wrote in his diary, "The Führer is terribly nervous, frightened by his own success," which gave the British time for an evacuation. They sent out a request for all persons with seaworthy vessels to help in the evacuation, and a great flotilla of fishing boats, lifeboats, paddle steamers, yachts came across the channel to save the British Army. And when the soldiers arrived back in Britain, they were given a hero's welcome. Churchill decided to use the event to build British morale. One soldier said, "We might have been the heroes of some great victory instead of a beaten army returning home having lost most of its equipment." The Battle of Midway took place in the Central Pacific around Midway Island. Japanese Navy hoped to take control, use it to stage an invasion of Hawaii. But American bombers, which had wandered off course, accidentally found the Japanese fleet while most of the ships were refueling, attacked them. The Japanese never fully recovered, and they never won another decisive naval battle for the rest of the war. It's the birthday of Ruth Westheimer, born in Frankfurt, Germany, 1928, to Orthodox Jewish parents. When the Nazis came to power, the family decided to flee Germany, but the grandmother refused to go, so Ruth was sent to safety in Switzerland, and she never saw her family again. Moved to Palestine, joined the underground movement fighting for a Jewish state, eventually moved to New York, got her degree, and started broadcasting a radio show called Sexually Speaking, which made her famous. Dr. Ruth, the sex expert. And it's the birthday of the horror writer Joe Hill, born in Herman, Maine, 1972, author of Heart-Shaped Box, Horns, and Nosferatu. He's the son of the novelist Stephen King, born Joseph Hillstrom King. Nosferatu features a vampire, but Hill says he's confused by the popularity of vampires. "I don't understand the romance of vampires," he said. "They're bloated leeches that live in dirt. That doesn't strike me as the height of eroticism." Here's a poem for today by Charles Bukowski, "A Song with No End." When Whitman wrote, "I sing the body electric," I know what he meant, I know what he wanted, to be completely alive every moment in spite of the inevitable. We can't cheat death, but we can make it work so hard that when it does take us, it will have known a victory just as perfect as ours. Charles Bukowski's poem, "A Song with No End," from The Night Torn with Mad Footsteps, published by Black Sparrow Press and used by permission here in the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry App, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. And by Progressive Insurance, with its Apron Project, celebrating progress and the people who make it happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Southeast Alaska Independent Living and your public media station in Juneau present the annual Only Fools Run at Midnight. Run, walk, or wheel 5K or 1 mile on June 13th at 11:59 p.m. Be one of the first 550 to pre-register now at ktoo.org or saleinc.org, and you'll get a free t-shirt. Dress in costume, compete for best centipede, and win prizes. Proceeds from this event will be shared between Sale and your public media station in Juneau. For more information, call 463-6422.
And welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling on a rainy Wednesday. Our next guest is Susan Yeager. She is the director of the Alaska VA healthcare system. And tomorrow evening, that's Thursday the 4th, there will be a so-called listening session here in Juneau at the Elizabeth Paradovich Hall from 5 to 6:30. Susan, thanks for joining us. I understand that you have some colleagues with you. Can you please introduce those folks and tell us what their area of expertise is with the VA system in Alaska?
Thank you, Lori. I'd be happy to. Yes, I have several folks here with me because we work very closely as a team here at Alaska VA. Had Sean Bransky is our associate director for the facility. Dylan James is our chief of our integrated care department, and that's the department that helps connect and authorize care for the private sector back and forth between our what services we provide. And Doris Giannis House is an executive assistant in the director's office, but she formerly was our chief of our travel and eligibility department. And that's a very important department to veterans because it establishes their eligibility for health care, and it also works with an issue that's very important to veterans, and that is helping to coordinate travel benefits to and from medical appointments. And Sam Hudson is with us here, too, as our public affairs officer.
Well, thank you for making time for us today. I can't imagine a system that could be more complicated to integrate, you use that word integrate, than veterans' health care here in Alaska. We're very spread out. We have a broad age group of veterans, as I'm sure we see across the country. And I know that, in particular, Alaska Native men and women have a per capita higher incidence of involvement in service to their country. And many of those people live in far away rural areas. Tell us a little bit about how you are able to achieve this integrated system here in Alaska.
Okay. Appreciate the question because we are quite different in Alaska than in other lower 48 VAs that I have been at. What we do is we have clinics, and we do have a clinic there in Juneau. We call them a CBOC, Community-Based Outpatient Clinic. We have five clinics along the road system, as we say in Alaska, where the majority of the population of veterans live. And so we do have those clinics of ourselves that we anchor our healthcare system. We have a joint venture, as many people know, with the 673rd Air Force Hospital here in Anchorage, and that provides a lot of inpatient services, emergency service, and other diagnostic services, specialty care. So we do have the clinic, but we also spend about half of our budget, Lori, on obtaining health care from the private sector, either through the community providers, such as the hospital there in Juneau, and also, as you mentioned, the Native veterans, yes, highest percentage of veterans in the military are from the Native population, and Alaska being the highest number of veterans per population, you know, in the state overall compared to the lower 48. So we have a relationship, a contract with CERCH there in Juneau, the Native organization, and as we have that 26 Native tribal organizations across the state where we provide access to veterans through that mechanism. We have relationships with other federal partners. One of the things that, so it is a system, and it takes a lot of care coordination. It can be frustrating for the veterans and our staff, too, frankly, on making sure that every veteran gets the care coordinated that they need when they need that care through a combination of VA-provided and obtaining from the private sector. A big change that's happening, which we really want all veterans to understand, and that is that the VA is changing. We're part of a national system. So just about a year and a half ago now, the VA has a contractor in Alaska, and the name of the contractor is TriWest. So TriWest is now a big player and will become a bigger player for veterans health care in Alaska. Still work done, and, you know, the VA here locally and our own staff will be highly involved. However, they are a preferred provider network builder. And so many veterans are going to be seeing that their consults, we call them, or the referrals to private sector care, will be going from the VA to TriWest, our provider, under a program that's just a little year and a half old. And then another really new, big, just now happening in a big way, is what was called the Veterans Choice Act. So the Choice Act is to started as a three-year pilot to build, ensure capacity for veterans to receive care in a timely way. And in Alaska, it means irregardless of where they live, as long as they're eligible, and that's one of our buzzwords, eligible veteran signing up for the VA. That's something they really need to do, and we work with them. But the Choice Act now is going to be very big in the future of the VA nationally and in Alaska. So at this point now, that just started when the president signed the bill last August. And so what we're looking now is that working with the veterans and providers, and this is something we'd really like to talk to folks in Juneau, not only the veterans but providers, on how to interact with TriWest again as a contractor under these new rules called the Choice Act. So that is extremely important now. It's just now happening in a big way. I see it continuing in the future. So it's a little different than how it has been. So we're really hoping that we get providers and veterans and families coming to our Juneau Town Hall meeting, as you mentioned, tomorrow from 5 p.m. to 6:30 p.m., and it'll be there for us to talk with folks and answer questions, clarify what is Choice Act and how do we continue to work with the VA, just to let folks, again, June 4th, 5 to 6:30 p.m., we're going to hold this town hall tomorrow at the Elizabeth Petrovich Hall, and that's on 320 West Willoughby Avenue in Suite 300. So hopefully everyone in Juneau knows where that is, and
they
find out.
We do, Susan. Thank you. Let me just reiterate something for clarification. TriWest is a network of providers, medical providers, preferred providers. Is that correct?
Yes, basically, yes. TriWest is a company. It's an actual company that has a contract with the VA, and you're exactly right. Their job is in Alaska is to pull that preferred provider, develop a preferred provider network for veterans to receive care that the VA ourselves cannot provide.
Understood. And when you say the VA, you mean the various clinics such as we have in Juneau, or military hospitals that are up at Joint Operating Base Elmendorf-Richardson in Anchorage. Is that correct?
That's correct, as well as currently our Native partners, Search, our contract we have with Search. They're in Juneau and in other clinics that they have around Southeast.
What are the most common questions that you receive at these listening sessions?
Well, you know, it kind of takes two forms, really, and that's one of the reasons we find this so important. There's two main sections. One of the categories is veterans themselves having an individual personal issue, not, you know, personal, their own particular challenge with accessing the VA, their own health care, or their own benefits. And so that is their individual concern. And so we do bring representatives, and this is an important thing, is we try to resolve people's problems if we can, and I say problems because half the time it's trying to interact with the bureaucracy, try to resolve the issues while we're there So we bring employees from our healthcare side, you know, can talk about eligibility and travel, get the veterans signed up if that we need to, bring folks, service organizations, service officers, our folks, our partners from Veterans Benefits in order to resolve an issue perhaps about their compensation claim, because that's, you know, can be, when we talk about the individual situation, it's either usually healthcare appointment related, or healthcare, their issues of healthcare, or their issues about their claim for disability compensation. And so those are usually the two main areas, and some frustrations that folks might have about, you know, how easy it is to get appointment from us, you know, answering, we got to do better of answering the phone, things like that.
Sure.
So it's usually either their individual situation relating to their appointments and medical care or their compensation.
Sure.
Some of the other questions come up are like more in general about some things you were mentioning. How does the VA actually work in Alaska? So we get some more general questions too about what is choice. So I do anticipate this will be our third meeting in Juneau like this, and this choice that I mentioned is just really new now in terms of it's kind of picking up speed, so to speak. So I think people might ask questions, what is choice, what does that mean to me? And so that will be kind of trying to provide that education information and handouts and contact information for veterans and providers to contact TriWest, who are, you know, our choice provider.
I'm wondering how many veterans in Alaska there are at this time. I assume you would have that number just about on the nose.
I do, and, you know, sometimes you hear different numbers based on the whatever data, the census and everything. What we look at in our knowledge, our base is over 74,000 veterans in Alaska.
That's more than 10% of our state population then, and certainly a considerable percentage of our adult population, I would guess.
That's right. And as we know, it's a large percentage compared to the lower 48. Of that 74,000, we see a little over 32,000 veterans who are actually eligible for VA benefits, health care benefits right now because they've signed up. They've filled out their 1010EZ. They've applied for care in the VA, and they're in one of the eight priority groups. And in Juneau, we actually have 820 individual veterans who are what we call impaneled, and what that means is they're enrolled for health care at our Juneau clinic.
Why wouldn't the other half of the veterans in Alaska be eligible for health care? Is it because they are covered by some other system?
Well, I think it's, Lori, it's really a combination of issues. Yes, it can be they might be covered by another system. They might be covered by multiple systems. We have many, for example, Native retired veterans, which that right there says they have eligibility in the military, in the VA, and the tribal setting. So some veterans choose to use their other benefits out if they're federal outside of the VA. Some would have necessarily, many do have Blue Cross, Blue Shield, other types of insurance. They would use that. But the thing is that we're really concerned about is that we want to make sure that veterans are knowledgeable, that they have that opportunity to enroll. And so that's our big campaign, really, why we're redoing these town halls, why we have a very robust rural outreach program, because we believe there's many veterans in Alaska who are eligible but just don't know it.
So if a veteran shows up or his or her family shows up tomorrow night and they want to make sure they are eligible, what is it that they should bring with them? Is there anything in particular that they will be required to have if they want to determine eligibility on the spot, which sounds like could be possible if they have the correct documentation?
Yes, and I'm going to ask Doris Yannis House, our expert in that department, to address this question.
Hi, this is Doris. So really the only thing that I would need to see is just a form of ID, just to verify the information that who I'm talking to is who they said they are, and I can take it from there.
Well, that sounds pretty doable and pretty simple. Will there be other areas about veterans service and benefits that can be addressed during the town hall tomorrow night, or is the focus strictly on health care? For example, if a veteran had a question about, say, educational benefits, Would there be someone there who could be prepared to answer questions outside the healthcare system serving vets?
Yes, Laura, this is Susan again. There will be representatives from other parts of the VA. We're healthcare, but our partners are from the benefits side. They'll be with us in the service organization representatives. Many people probably know Lucy Gifford there in Juneau. She's an expert in veterans benefits. She's actually had worked for the VA for over 30 years in healthcare and benefits. She's a local resource there. Hopefully she'll be with us tomorrow night, and we'll certainly provide information to veterans. She's right there on the ground to work on individual people's situation because, yes, we'll have people to talk about education. There's issues. Many people ask about what's going on with their compensation request. Where is that? How do they file for compensation? So we'll have people to address those things. We try to bring the biggest array of expertise so that it's a one-stop shop on these town halls.
Great.
Because we owe the veterans to answer their questions regardless of what it is about the VA
or
their relationship with them.
I want to thank you and your staff for your time today and remind the public that there is a town hall tomorrow night sponsored by the Alaska Veterans Healthcare System, but it's not strictly related to those questions. There are many other topics they can address. And again, the town hall is in Juneau Thursday evening. That's tomorrow, June 4th, from 5 to 6:30 at the Elizabeth Paradovich Hall. Susan and your staff, thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you, Lori.
It's whale watch season, and NOAA Fisheries reminds you to keep your distance from endangered humpback whales. Federal law prohibits pursuit or approach within 100 yards. Boaters should operate at a slow, safe speed when in the vicinity of whales and limit viewing time to 30 minutes or less. To minimize disturbance to the animals and for your own safety, avoid approaching whales when other vessels are near. And do not encircle or trap whales between boats. To report a suspected violation, call NOAA Fisheries Law Enforcement at 1-800-853-1964.
Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling, and my next guest is Terry Stage Harvey, and she's with Shepherd of the Valley Lutheran Church, and they have a block party and bike rodeo scheduled for this Sunday, but it's really much bigger than that, it sounds like, Terry. Why don't you tell us about the event itself, but how it got started and really how it is kind of the launch of a larger program than just that one event.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
This is our fourth year, and the Summer Lunch Program came out of the Food Resource Summit. A crew of us from all the different food agencies got together and started identifying some gaps, and a big one was around youth, especially during the summer, weekends, those kinds of times. So we started a Summer Lunch Program, but it was really low attendance that first year. Realized transportation was a big part, and so wanted to get kids hooked up with bikes and how to do that safely. And so the next year we had a big bike rodeo where we fixed bikes and traded bikes up. So if you had outgrown your bike, you could bring it in and we would get you a new one and a refurbished one, I shouldn't say new, and then helmets. We have a whole bunch of helmets, and that was a big hit, and our program doubled. We did it again last year, and it doubled again to about 45 to 50 kids a day that we were feeding. And so this year, we will kick it off with a bike rodeo again. We work with the Juneau Freewheelers, the Mendenhall Flying Lions, the Juneau Police Department. We've refurbished about 25 bikes and have about over 100 helmets. We want to make sure that everyone protects their brains. And so what we do is we have a bike safety course and have the kids go through that. And then they sign up to have a middle schooler ride with them safely to the program, especially if they're under 10 years old. And we have a crew of middle schoolers who are trained to be bike buddies. And so they'll get the kids safely to the program for the next 9 weeks whenever they want to go. So we provide a hot lunch Monday through Friday from 12 to 1:30 for anyone between 3 and 18 years old who shows up for lunch.
And Terry, is the serving of the lunch only at Shepherd of the Valley, or are there other locations?
Well, for us, it's only at Shepherd of the Valley. We have out of the church we kind of run that program. All we have volunteers from lots of different churches and non-churches who come and help. But there are, out of that, several other programs around town have started. There's one in Greening Park. And also in Cedar Woods and, no, Geneva Woods and Cedar Park over in Douglas, that Douglas Methodist and Northern Light work on. So
there are some lunch programs in the different geographical areas of town.
And the best way to find that list is on the United Way of Southeast Alaska website. They have a great list of all the food, emergency food resources around town.
Tell me a little bit about this food resource network. It sounds like that was the genesis of the idea for serving nourishment to kids during the summer. How did that network get started?
It started in cooperation with United Way with a desire to decrease competition for resources and really have food agencies work together to complement and make sure that we're filling in all the gaps. And so we've been meeting and talking and arguing and talking and figuring out.
You mean negotiating?
Sometimes.
That too.
And figuring out how to work together. That there are more than enough resources in Juneau to make sure everyone is fed.
Terry, are you with one of those food resource agencies, or are you with the church, or how did
so
you
I'm actually a pastor at Shepherd of the Valley.
Okay.
That's what I do. But I have a great passion for making sure that people have what they need to eat. And it comes out, I was a pastor in Michigan for 10 years, where we did work together and managed to really fill in some of the needs in that community and meet those. So I see in Juneau a great need to collaborate better. So I kind of push that.
Now, what about these middle schoolers who are volunteer bike buddies? Do they get trained, or how do they become part of that program? How do you recruit them, and what are their requirements?
A lot of them are involved with the church in one way or another, so we have that connection. What I love about this program is that it is not need-based. It is anyone who shows up gets a hot lunch, and so the kids enjoy each other's company. We have reading mentors, so we've got this big room with tons of books and beanbag chairs and pillows where the kids hang out and read. And we also, there's a different activity each day where we try to get adults and kids mixing, because I think one of the big challenges we have right now are those intergenerational relationships, especially in the summer, where you can spend all day without necessarily hanging out with an adult. So we have science experiments that adults are working on with kids, and gardening. We have a great garden going. Cooking on Wednesdays. If ever you want a wild time, come in on a Wednesday. We have about 10 different cooking stations where the kids prepare the lunch on that day and make their own meatballs and everything else. It's quite an adventure.
Well, the interdisciplinary and cooperative aspect of this is, I think, demonstrative of what our community can do. And your point is taken about having ample resources. The question is, are we maximizing them through that cooperative effort and not overlapping services so that we can make sure that as many folks as possible are participating? I do want to mention that Shepherd of the Valley Lutheran Church is at 4212 Mendenhall Loop Road, so those listening can get kind of an idea of where it's located in case they're interested in referring a kid to show up there. And it looks like it's right near the intersection with Taku Boulevard. That's Central Valley. So I want to repeat some of the basics here. On this Sunday, the 7th of June, between 4 and 6 p.m., a bike rodeo and block party will kick off the summer food program, which itself is every single day, Monday through Friday, from noon to 1:30 at the church, which is, as we mentioned, at the intersection of Taku and Mendenhall. Anybody 18 and younger can show up for a free hot meal, and it sounds like some fun activities as well. Now, what if an adult would like to help in some way? What might their role be, and whom should they contact?
We love volunteers, and you don't have to be a member of the church to do that. We do ask that folks go through a background check, and we'll run that, be willing to go through a background check. But if people show up, we have a very clear rule that wherever a child is present, at least two adults need to be present. So safety is a huge thing for us, but we welcome volunteers. And again, I love having grandmas and grandpas in the reading room where kids can kind of curl up and be read to. And that's some of my favorite images when I look in the reading room and there's middle schoolers reading to like little ones and just all kind of crammed in there enjoying books. And it's like, that's good stuff. And
is there a number that an interested person could call?
Yeah, they can call 789-4093. And also check out our website, sovlutheran.org.
SOV, Shepherd of the Valley.
Shepherd of the Valley, Lutheran.org. There's always information on our Facebook page and all kinds of ways to get hold of us.
And if folks are just tuning in, we're talking to Terry Stage Harvey. She is the pastor at Shepherd of the Valley Lutheran Church. And the bike rodeo this week is also a chance for kids to get a helmet or get a trade-up on a bike and or a helmet. So if they've got one that they've outgrown, this is a good chance for a trade-up. And it sounds like cooperation with a number of other agencies has refurbished more than 20 bikes.
And if they have a bike that needs a tire fixed or some easy repair, I have lots of mechanics will be there on hand, ready to work on bikes. So we want to make sure that everyone has a bike for this summer and can get where they need to go safely. And I can't guarantee anything, but would like to work with folks and make that happen.
Well, thank you, Terry, for joining us again. The Shepherd of the Valley Lutheran Church is launching its summer lunch program, which will start next Monday. But they're starting with a party on Sunday afternoon between 4 and 6 p.m. at the church, which is at the corner of Taku and Mendenhall Loop Road. Bring your bike, get a bike, or get a helmet. And if you're 18 and younger, stop by for lunch Monday through Friday. If you're an adult who'd like to help in some way, give a call at 789-4093. Thanks for stopping by, Terry.
Thank you for having me, Lori.
This is Bird Note. When we look for robins in spring and early summer, we often see them with their beaks full of earthworms. That tasty payload tells us a couple of things. For one thing, there's a nest full of baby birds nearby, waiting for their next meal. But that beak full of worms is also a clue about the conditions in which robins choose to nest. It turns out that robins are pretty choosy about this. When scientists looked at climate data for over 8,500 robins' nests in many parts of the U.S., they found that temperature is important. Robins will nest only if the mean noon temperature is between 45 and 65 degrees. But even more critical is relative humidity. It needs to be right around 50% in the middle of the day. And if it isn't, the birds will hold off. What's so special about this combination of temperature and humidity? It's the sweet spot when soft invertebrates move up near the surface of the soil, like earthworms. Essential fuel for hungry nestlings. As for exactly how robins sense when the humidity is 50%, that's still an open question. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
And we're with artist McGill Pratt talking about her show, which is opening this Friday, which is First Friday. Mm-hmm. Her show happens to be at the Silver Bow Inn. Tell us a little bit about why this one might be special.
Well, this one is special because it's a little more humorous than some of my others. The title of the show is A Show of Forks, like silverware forks. And so there's lots of silverware standing up doing things.
And are you, is this something that you do full-time in your life, McGill? Are you a professional artist? And in other words, can you make a living that way? Or is this something that's a passion that you spend a lot of time doing?
It's a passion I spend a lot of time doing. I'm a mental health therapist. Mm-hmm. I work at Search during the day, and in some of the evenings I have a private practice.
Tell me a little bit about that nexus. I can't resist this question between truly therapy and art.
I'm sure there's a connection somewhere. I don't know. You know, one time I did a show. It was called Windows and Doors. And somebody said, are you looking in the windows or out? And I said, I'm looking in the windows. So maybe that has something to do with the therapy part. I don't know.
We'll let the listeners decide for themselves. Okay, so I've got to go back to forks.
Okay.
Why forks?
You know, I've been thinking about how this all started. It started with one of the pieces that's in the show. And for some reason, I had all these forks standing up. And I put oranges on them and limes on them, and so it's kind of like they're having this conversation. But then I couldn't figure out what to do with the background, so I just let it set for a year. And then last fall, I painted a picture of a stack of bagels with a palette knife. So it was all palette knife, and I had a fork bracing the bagels because they were starting to tip over. And so then I put a fork in the background, and I thought, oh, I like painting forks. So that's how it started.
How many pieces will be in the show, and how long have you been working on it?
There are 7 pieces with forks, and I have to tell you, I probably didn't start painting until March. So normally I like to start much earlier.
Mm-hmm.
That gives me time to make, you know, a few that are not going to be successful that I can delete. So that's it. And then I'm thinking about putting in a two larger pieces that I did last November. They're 10 by 20. They're narrative paintings. And I think they're quite lovely.
What does that mean, a narrative painting?
It's telling a story. And there's people in it.
Okay.
So you can look at the people and you can kind of make up your own story. But since they don't really go with the theme, I didn't put them in the show. But I think I just might for First Friday and then take them down.
And again, you'll be at the Silver Bow.
Yes.
When did you start doing art? Were you a teenager, more of an adult, or has this been something that has been part of you forever?
Oh, you know, I remember doing art in school, and I quit. You know, there were no classes available when I was in high school. And then somewhere in my 20s, I thought I would start painting again, and then decided, well, I would like to paint more, so I got my AA in fine art. Did painting. Then I thought, well, I need to get a BA now. But I don't think I can make a living with my fine art. So I'm going to get a degree in graphic design. So I've been dabbling through the years, but I can't say full time or wholeheartedly because I'm always doing something else.
You brought in a couple of pieces and they look impressionistic to me. Mm-hmm. Looking at, brushes of color.
Mm-hmm.
One is appears to be a picture of a bush that is almost magenta, like something that wouldn't grow here.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is it looks like a still life. Tell me a little bit about this part of your painting.
These are for two different shows. The one with the pink tree is actually from Washington, University of UW. It's a cherry tree.
Cherry blossom.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And it was by the little, like, shed, garden shed. And so that was part of the Windows and Doors series. And then this one with the still life was part of an egg series where I did a bunch of paintings based on this poem. And the poem is actually on the back of the painting. But that was, I just loved that. I loved the colors. I loved the way it came together. And I was actually happy it didn't sell.
Eggs, you are a nectar in an omelet, in souffles, a savory dream. Baked or boiled, you are bewitching. In a quiche, you reign supreme. It sounds like you are inspired by any number of things.
I am.
And where do you see perhaps your next inspiration coming from? Have you experienced it yet?
You know, no, I haven't. And the thing is, when I'm painting, I have to have a muse. If I don't have the muse, it doesn't work. But when I've got the muse, I can just paint up a storm.
So it's an organizing element for you.
It is.
What is your preferred medium?
Oil. I love mixing the paint. I love squeezing it out of the tube. It reminds me of just playing in the mud as a kid.
Now, the fork display, you mentioned you had several forks standing upright. It sounds sculptural. Did you intend that, and do you do that type of 3D work as well?
No, I don't do 3D work. It just all started with me standing the forks in the styrofoam for that one painting, and then I, you know, like the idea of the fork standing up. So I've got one called... it's got bagels also. I was also on a bagel stick. I called it Hawaiian bagels because these bagels are on the beach. It's pretty cute.
And I have to ask, what made you think to put the forks upright in the styrofoam in the first place?
That is a very good question, and I don't remember what started it. I mean, it's not what I normally do. I'm normally pretty conservative. I have to say I'm a conservative person. And... I don't know. I just had this idea to put these forks upright.
So while eggs may be an unusual muse.
Maybe it kind of led from it,
this sounds oddness. Like a more whimsical offtake for you then.
Yeah.
Tell me a couple of other organizing ideas that you've used to create shows. You said windows and doors, eggs, forks.
Well, my husband gave me the idea that's called Trailside Wait-A-Bits. So it's things that you might see on the side of a trail as you're taking a hike. I haven't done that yet, but it's, you know, it's in the works. And it just, I don't know, when something strikes me, I just think, oh, that's a great idea.
So tell me why someone should stop by and see your show.
There
are many choices on First Friday.
Sure.
So why should your show be on
there?
Someone's list?
I think, it's a good show. I think partly because it is whimsical, partly because of the colors. I've gotten into using a lot brighter colors than I used to do. I used to be pretty gray, and I think must have been in a gray phase. I don't know, but the colors are a lot brighter. And I just think I'm getting better as a painter. I'm getting more confidence, and I think that shows in the painting.
So growth as an individual artist then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, McGill Pratt's show is tomorrow at the Silver Part. Not
Friday,
tomorrow,
Friday.
Friday, first Friday, at the Silver Bow, and the theme is forks in a variety of positions. It sounds like.
Boy, I don't want to say that because most of them. Well, there are some that are bowing down. Okay, I got these bagels that are bowing down to a donut, which is a clever little piece that I like. But yeah, you could say they're in a variety of positions. Yeah.
Well, you certainly piqued my curiosity, and I appreciate your coming in and talking to us today about your show on Friday.
Yes.
Thanks, McGill.
Okay, thank you.
Well, the weather for the next few days, at least through next Tuesday, pretty much looks and sounds the same, and that is lots of clouds with a chance of rain every day, every evening, with highs in the high 50s. But that's okay. Our rainforest welcomes it. Tomorrow afternoon on Juno Afternoon, Shona Osterhout will host, and you'll be hearing from John Neary about new fees for the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Beth Weigel will be here to highlight upcoming activities at the library. Rick Clare and Michael Hunter, Colleen Goodrich, will be here talking about First Friday at Kales, and you'll hear about other art happenings in Juneau during Arts Up. That's tomorrow on a Juneau Afternoon.